You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Daily Vet Life podcast, where we chat with equine veterinarians about the cases they've worked on in their clinics. I'm your host, Alex Beckstedt, editorial director of Equimanagement, and today I'm speaking with Dr. Carrie Schlachter about rehabbing a horse with a suspensory ligament injury, as well as sacroiliac pain. This episode of the Daily Vet Life podcast is brought to you by DECRA. Dr. Schlachter is a pioneer in integrative sports medicine and rehabilitation therapies. She founded and designed the rehabilitation and fitness programs at Circle Oak Equine Sports Medicine and continues her pursuit of excellence through Animals in Motion, or AIM, a hub for cutting-edge veterinary care, education, and sanctuary for animals in need. Dr. Schlachter is a board-certified diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Sports Medicine and Rehabilitation and an official FEI delegate for Jumpers. She has contributed her expertise to the ACVSMR Examination Committee and the AAEP Scientific Review and Editorial Committee. She teaches globally for equinology and lectures on topics including sports medicine, rehabilitation, and digital diagnostic imaging. She is also a co-founder of the Academy of Animal Sports Science. Thank you, Dr. Schlachter, for joining us today.
Thank you, Alex. I'm happy to be here.
So you've helped rehab countless horses, but today we're going to hear about one in particular, an equitation horse that you worked with after he sustained a suspensory ligament injury. Could you go ahead and give us some background about this horse and his injury and how he first presented to you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Tony was a lovely horse. He was a very kind, very big warm blood gelding, and he had just a very gentlemanly air about him, which made him just a dream to work on a day-to-day basis. And he was a great equitation horse, and he made it to the East Coast with his teenager. They made it to the equitation finals, and they did very respectably in the equitation finals. And I got a call from the trainer who had already left the East Coast and was traveling back to the West Coast, who said that her groom had called and the horse had slipped, it seemed like, when he was getting up in his stall from sleeping, you know, from laying down. And he was holding one of the legs up in the air. And so I advised that they go ahead and have a vet look at him since he was supposed to get on the trailer at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And so they had a vet come out and look at him. And by the time the veterinarian got there, he was weight bearing. He was walking on the leg. He was doing okay. So they give him some pain meds and they put him on the trailer and they shipped him back to us. And so when I saw him, it was about Wednesday of that week. And so, that was on a Monday or so. And by the time I saw him, it was Wednesday of that week. And he'd been on the trailer for quite a long time. And so by the time I saw him, he was sore pretty much the whole left side of his body. I imagine he'd been compensating during the trailer ride as well for the injury and stuff. But he was basically sore from the base of his low neck all the way back along the saddle area, his lumbars, his sacroiliac, even the hamstrings on the left side of his body were really sore. And he was, you could maybe think he was a little tiny bit lame at the walk, but really he was lame at the trot, just a solid 3 out of 5 lame at the trot. And he went from, I would say, you know, a significant lameness to a very minor lameness, more looking like body sore and a little asymmetric with a proximal suspensory ligament nerve block. And so that indicated to us that we had a, you know, significant amount of the pain was coming from the proximal suspensory. So at that point, we went ahead and ultrasounded that suspensory ligament, and we found that he had a significant tear in the suspensory ligament. And that's, you know, it's an unusual case because of how it happened, where he slipped in a stall, you know, and got up holding the leg up in the air. At least that's what we suspect happened, you know, that we suspect that's when it happened, not during the competition or anything like that. however, we... when it gets interesting for Tony, from my perspective, is after he comes back from a rehabilitation program. So he went to a local rehabilitation program, and he was there for 6 months, I'd say. And I ran the rehabilitation program from afar and rechecked him every 30 days. And he was doing really well during that whole period of time. He got treatments such as a laser. He got lasered like 3 times a week to start, and then it dropped down to 2 times a week. He got shockwave treatments. He had 3 shockwave treatments about 2 weeks apart at the beginning of the program. He actually had a second round of shockwave on the ligament as well, because it had, it was looking a little bit, it had stalled out in its healing around 4 months. So we did a second round of shockwave on the ligament. And also he had underwater treadmill therapy, controlled exercise walking, and some other therapeutic modalities that they offered at the rehab facility. So he got quite the book was thrown at him. He had a regenerative injection as well into the ligament itself, the injury itself. So he had, you know, he had everything thrown at him, and he was looking pretty good. Around 6 months is when we brought him back to the training barn, and we put a rider on him in earnest, meaning that we started trot work under saddle. And so when we started that trot work under saddle, I would say maybe a week into it, the trainer called and said, he doesn't feel very good, you know? And so when I went out to look at him, I also agreed based on the video and watching him in person that he didn't look very good. It wasn't that he was necessarily limping like he was before, but he wasn't trying very hard. He wasn't pushing very hard off of that leg. And also the leg wasn't traversing a full track, so it wasn't tracking up into the footfall of the leg in front of it. So he was short striding on that leg.
Calling all equine veterinarians. Are you tired of feeling like you're on an island when it comes to caring for your patients? Dechra Veterinary Products is here to bridge that gap. They understand the challenges you face. That's why they offer a comprehensive line of high-quality products like Zycosan and Osphos, and empower you to offer your patients cutting-edge therapies like ProVet APC. They're not just a supplier, though. Dechra provides ongoing training and support to help you stay ahead of the curve and deliver the best possible care. Visit www.dechra-us.com to discover how Dechra can be your partner in equine health.
So at that point, what we decided to do was reblock the suspensory and see if that area, we'd just maybe gone too fast for him or something, or maybe he'd re-injured. However, he did not block to the suspensory. And on physical exam, he was pretty tight again all along his top line. However, I'd say the bulk of the pain was focused in the sacroiliac area this time, meaning that the area where the saddle is was a little sore on the left side. The lumbars were a little sore. The whole longissimus muscle was sore. But the bulk of the pain was pinpointed towards that left sacroiliac. And if I stood back and looked at him with a really critical eye, you could see that the muscling on the left side of his body, was left side of his hind end, wasn't quite as good as the muscling on the right side of his hind end. At that point, we decided, well, let's just send him back to the rehab facility. He's not quite there yet, you know, from a riding perspective. And we went ahead and injected the sacroiliac. Under the injections coupled with the month of the underwater treadmill definitely improved him. You know, he came back from that month because he came right back to the training center then after a month. And he looked like the rider was like, okay, now I've got something to work with. Now I can actually ride this horse, you know, and stuff. He definitely seemed to improve a lot with that added month of rehab plus the underwater treadmill, but there just still was not a lot of range of motion back there. And so we began a series of weekly massage, chiropractic acupuncture treatments. We did 3 days a week riding, but since the riding seemed to aggravate a little bit that area, like made it more obvious to us, we did do 3 days a week on the of just long lining. Because I felt like that he looked really quite good on a lunge line and on a long line. So I felt like if he looked good in that way, then that was going to be encouraging the right kind of movement, you know? So we did that 3 days a week and then 3 days a week riding. And we kept working on the area. And after a couple of weeks, it started to look better, but wasn't really like popping right back into looking fabulous. So we did another series of shockwave on the area. This was the first series of shockwave on the SI. So we did a series of shockwave up on the SI area, and we started a 30 days of FES. I mean, this guy, honestly, from the beginning of his rehab to the end, I think went through almost every modality that I had in my tool shed from rehabilitation. So we got up to doing FES treatments daily. I taught the girls at the barn how to do it, and they did it daily, as well as working him over ground poles on a regular basis. And then we did core activations almost daily as well to get that back, to start to kick back into full function. And I would say it was towards the end of that. So this was like 6 months, 7 months, around 8 months post-injury. The trainer called and said she'd had three good days in a row where she felt like he was, you know, three riding days in a row where she felt like he was back to his old self. And from that point forward, honestly, he never looked back. It was like finally something broke loose up in that area, and he was able to track normally. And the suspensory was really never became a problem again. He went on and had, you know, another 4 or 5 years of career at that level, and then honestly got sold to the East Coast. And so I don't know what he's doing now, but that this was at least 9 years ago. So I think he was a really great case of a horse that took a lot of effort from a rehab perspective, but came back 100% fully. So,
well, that's, I find that super fascinating that he ended up with the two concurrent or different injuries. I'm sure you're purely theorizing, but do you think he sustained the SI injury at the same time as the suspensory, or do you think that happened subsequent? Could it be a compensatory injury? What were your thoughts?
Yeah. And actually, this is one of the reasons I chose this case, is because it's a complex of injuries that I see a lot. So I see that when they have a proximal suspensory injury, I see pain up in the sacroiliac area. And in the acute situation like his, you know, I always suspect that it could just be secondary. You know, it's because he's holding the leg. And for this guy, he'd just gotten off a trailer ride from the East Coast, you know. But now I look at it this was again many moons ago. And now I look at it with a much more critical eye. So to me, if they have a significant amount of sacroiliac pain at the inception of the injury, so when I'm diagnosing the injury and I block the horse and they still have pain up in the sacroiliac area, I'll come back 2 weeks later once we've started treatment on the suspensory. And if the sacroiliac is still sore 2 weeks into the rehab program, I start to treat it right away. I don't wait. Because I do feel like the fragile connection between the sacroiliac and the suspensory is really quite strong. And we saw that, we did a dissection at the University of Michigan, a couple of years ago for the Academy of Animal Sports Science, where we videoed full dissection of a horse. And one of the things that we really discovered is that you can pull on the fascia up in the, basically the around the hip area, and just by pulling on the fascia, you can flex the lower leg. You know, you can flex the fetlock and the foot way down into the lower leg of the hind leg. So that to me shows that there's a connection that goes beyond the muscles, tendons, and ligaments that we've really focused our, you know, whole careers on, yeah, into something that's more of a, you know, just rote basic connective tissue. And that connective tissue, if that gets torn, I think we know that it'll scar. And if it scars and scars tightly, then I think it can cause a lot of discomfort and dysfunction in the area. And I think, you know, Tony was sore up there, but he was never like, he's going to drop to the ground, he's so sore, you know. It was more that, you know, when you put the rider on his back, he had to engage that longissimus muscle and engage the sacroiliac region. And he wasn't able to do that and lengthen the leg at the same time. You know, as long as there was no rider on, he could lengthen the fascia, you know, lengthen the leg to a full range of motion. But when you put that rider up, everything tightened up there. And certainly some of that could be like, you know, not physical, but pain and the way he moved his body from the pain, you know, 100% that could be. And I think that was a component, but I also think there could be a purely physical component of that area. And one of the reasons why I think we like the underwater treadmill for horses so much is that it minimizes that. You know, I mean, if he had had an injury without the benefit of the underwater treadmill, it's possible that that could have been much worse. You know, that leg could have been much more painful over time. You know, it's a difficult, when they say like tearing up in the sacroiliac area, you know, it's difficult to diagnose that. Like you can on nuclear scintigraphy, people that do a lot of those will see like an amorphous black blob up there. And they'll think that, oh, that's associated with a lot of sacroiliac inflammation, but it's not a well-studied area and it's not a well-studied, you know, type of injury to say, well, you know, what in 80% of the suspensory injuries, there's a similar type of tearing or injury up in the sacroiliac area. We don't have that data, you know, at all.
Right.
So, that's, you know, one of those great mysteries of horses.
one of many.
Right. Exactly. And I also think, you know, we deal a lot in the sport horses. That's 98% of my practice is a middle-aged, you know, warm blood or quarter horse, you know, or, you know, the thoroughbreds, which a lot of the research has been done on, are a minor portion of the practice. So these middle-aged warm bloods, I think that, you know, they might have other issues too that could contribute to that type of injury. So,
yeah.
Yeah. So that's where I'm at with the suspensories and the sacroiliacs in my life.
Well, I mean, it makes sense when you explain it that way with the physical connections.
Yeah.
What goes into your decision-making when deciding what to do with these tough cases? Is it pretty much just let's try everything if finances aren't an issue?
Yes and no. So again, this was a while ago. And I think for me, it was about, well, you know, this is when he didn't block to the suspensory, I had a moment of like blind panic, you know, where I was like, oh, okay. So it's like, you know, where, and again, this was a while ago, but you know, where do I go from here? And at that point, that's when I start often, I'll either recommend more imaging, you know, something that I can't offer, like a nuclear scintigraphy or MRI, CT, you know, something like that. But of course, with the imaging, you need to know where to image, right? So if they're not blocking to where you suspect them to block, you know, then you've got to either start, you know, serially blocking different parts of the leg, or you've got to make your best guess based on the clinical exam. And he had been giving me signs all along that his sacroiliac was hurting. I just wasn't really listening to them because I was so focused on the suspensory, you know? Mm-hmm. And then once I started to listen to what his body was saying, you know, then I was able to focus the treatments up high. And again, I think nowadays I would be much more aggressive. You know, back then I was like, oh, well, you know, he's probably just a little sore. Let's just give him a little more time and do an injection up there. And nowadays I think I would have started, if I had to pick treatments for, you know, an injured sacroiliac that's injured like concurrently with a suspensory, I shockwave them both at the same time. If the owners are willing, I'll have them do the FES on the sacroiliac, you know, before they're in any sort of work or anything like that. So just when they're in their initial rest period. And I also now differentiate between a hypermodal sacroiliac a lot more. It's a lot more important to me if the sacroiliac is hypermodal versus hypomodal. If it's fixed, then we just need to get it moving for it to correct itself often. But if it's hypermodal, that means it's unstable, right? And so if it's unstable, then I need it to rest before I ask it to move too much. Mm-hmm. So that differentiation, I think, has come around over the last, 10 or 15 years. And that helps a lot with these cases as to directing what the next step is from a treatment perspective. But I think my two favorites are FES and Shockwave up there. And then I do inject a lot of them, but I tend to try those other modalities first now.
Right. Yeah. So with a case like this, what sort of maintenance recommendations or things to keep an eye out would you give the owner going forward as far as keeping that hind end strong and things like that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Actually, what we did for him was while we had him in his care, he got chiropractic and acupuncture monthly. And almost monthly, I should say. But what that does for me is it lets somebody who knows how the sacroiliac moves keep their hands on the horse on a regular basis. So we were able to, preempt any sort of sacroiliac tightening again happening in that area. That was like step number one. And the other thing it did is it provided that sacroiliac with an opportunity on a monthly basis to be moving at a full range of motion through the chiropractic adjustments and stuff. So that combination of things, I think, was probably the most powerful long term. Mm-hmm. If you didn't have access to that, I think the other modalities that are out there that I would, FES would be my next choice if you had access to that. And the third option, I think, would probably be PEMF, pulsed electromagnetic field therapy.
Yeah.
Either through a beamer system or through a P3 system. They work in very different ways, but again, it's more about like muscle health in that area than anything else. And if keeping the muscles in the hind end happy will help keep the fascia happy and so on and so forth. So,
yeah.
And massage would be good too.
So is there any other advice that you would give someone facing a similar type of case as this?
If I have a case that has multiple areas of injury, I treat right away. I don't wait. I don't wait for different things to show up. I don't treat one injury and then treat another. I go ahead and treat all the injuries that I find right away. So if I have a horse that has a multi-leg lameness, I now will block one, block the other, image everything. I used to kind of like pick the worst and focus on that, but I've been, I don't want to say burned, but I've been left short too many times in the past. So if I have something that has a multiple area injury, I'll treat them all at the same time. That would be my biggest advice.
Well, great.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, Dr. Schlachter, for taking the time to come on this episode of Daily Vet Life and share Tony's case with us. I found that super interesting, having dealt with SI injuries in horses myself.
Yes. Thank you, Alex. It was fun to talk about Tony again. I really liked him. He's a great horse.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning in. And thanks to our sponsor, Dekra. And join us next month.